We're going to look this morning again at a topic of enhancing congregational life, and the title is The Role of Single Adults, The Role of Single Adults in the Church. So I'm married to Sandy. Some of those of you who don't know, at one point I was a single adult. I turned 13, I became a man, I put away childish things, and for 6 long years, I was a single adult. And in January of 95, in the halls of SMBI, I saw Sandy Rhodes. She was singing, and I was distracted, and I dated her, got married, and for 25 years, I've probably been somewhat of an example from 1 Corinthians 7 when married people can get distracted. 1 Corinthians 7, which we're going to read again, says that if a man chooses not to get married, or if a man is not married, he can devote his love to the Lord without distraction. And if a woman chooses not to get married or is not married, she can devote herself to the Lord without distraction. So, I've thought about it. I don't know how these committees make this decision. Maybe they were thinking, okay, who could we... Yeah, Rich Schwartz, he was single for 6 years, from 13 to 19. I think actually they asked a few other people first. They're like, okay, let's have Rich do it. So, from an experience standpoint, I got to say I'm not speaking from a wealth of experiential knowledge on the role of single adults in the church. But from an observational standpoint, from viewing what people have done for me, single adults have done for me, seeing what they have contributed to the life of the church, I love what God has done through Jesus Christ in my life in the church. And so therefore, I'm passionate about this topic. You could even ask me, could you preach about the role of children in the church? Yes, because I love the church of God. And I want to see people engaged, committed to the church of God. So if it's the role of young marrieds in the church, bring it on. We need young marrieds to be engaged in the church. Older people, even retired people. They don't just have to go to Florida. They can be engaged in the church. Actually, you can be engaged in the church in Florida. But any person in this context, in our little time we have here, we're looking at single adults. But any person, my call is, commit yourself to the Lordship of Jesus Christ and Him crucified and risen, and join the church and be committed to the church. So this afternoon, we're going to take a look at some teaching in 1 Corinthians 7. We're going to consider roles in the church briefly, single men and women could have from 1 Timothy 3, 1 Timothy 2. Look a little bit about that. Take a brief look at the history, some history, of the pendulum swing that seems to have happened. Jewish culture, Jesus brought it back, and then a few other things that have happened with our views of marriage and singleness. And I did have a survey that I gave out, so I want to do a quick little report on that. 95 people responded. Amazing. And then I want to challenge us to apply some more thoughtful, proactive approaches, possibly, to this this role. Okay. So as I reviewed the responses from the survey, as I thought about my involvement in church, two churches in Ohio, and then two churches in New York, most recently involved in a church plant from Followers of Jesus to the Bronx. And I contemplated the role of single adults in my experience. The positive is that I have seen so much impact in the life of the church from single people, from single adults. And so they have amazing capacity to influence and energize and mobilize the life of the church. So that's a positive. One of the negatives that I've seen, and even in talking with people, is that unfortunately unmarried men and women, single adults, are often not included or engaged in church life. You know, there's a number of reasons. That's an unfortunate fact. It's a sad reality. And they're not engaged in church life, church community, church ministry. So then the question is, where do we go from here? So if this is one of the sad realities, where do we go from here? So I'm looking at Ephesians 4:16 as something I would like to kind of repeat some of the messages from Ephesians 4:16. The Church of Jesus Christ, I'm kind of paraphrasing some of Ephesians 4:16. The Church of Jesus Christ is called to grow up in all things into Him who is the head, Jesus Christ. Every part does its share, causing growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. So that's five words. Every part does its share. Can you say that with me? Every part does its share. Now, somebody spoke to Doran. Thank you, Doran, for your message on the role of youth. Somebody spoke to Doran afterwards and made a note. Doran communicated to me. I think it's a good note that sometimes the youth and maybe the single adults are valued by what they do. So maybe we should include every person is known. Every part does its share. Every person is known. Now, in the results from the survey, one of the brothers who responded said, small churches are better because we can all know each other. So I guess that's a plug for small churches, because it is a little hard to know everybody if we have a big church. But every part does its share, and this obviously includes single adults. It's not just knowing the children, not just knowing the young marrieds or the older marrieds or the youth or the retired ones, but every part does its share. So if you want to turn with me to 1 Corinthians 7, 1 through 9, look at that passage. Brother Doran already read a portion from that passage. Some of it refers to marriage, and some of it affirms singles. Now concerning, I'm going to read from the New King James, by the way, 1 Corinthians 7. Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does, and likewise the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But I say this as a concession, not as a commandment, for I wish that all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So what is the role of the single adult? One of the things, the realities of life is that God has ordained that if a man or a woman is not married, they are not to have sexual relations. So there at the very beginning, he says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. So one of the calls to the youth and the single adults, the unmarried, even the widow or the widower, is to abstain from sexual immorality. That's a call. It's a high calling. And we need to affirm each other and call each other to that. I've thought about that more recently in the Bronx. We see, I think, the area of the Bronx, it's one of the highest, perhaps the highest, abortion rate per capita of any county in the U.S. So there's a lot of abortions that take place there, which is a tragedy. So, Lord willing, February 17th, we're going to have a banquet. It's right around Valentine's Day for single mothers and Four of them who are planning to come just gave birth to unplanned children, and they're not married. So it's an opportunity for us to show love to them because they chose not to abort this unplanned pregnancy because we're pro-life. But if you think about it, if they hadn't been involved in sexual immorality, they wouldn't have been faced with that question even. So the church has a responsibility to teach the youth and the single adults, the unmarried, whether they're widows or widowers, to abstain from sexual immorality, to bless the Lord, to be married to the Lord, because we have to kind of walk back that stance so we can learn at the very beginning how to hold our bodies, our minds, our eyes before the Lord. So that's a call right there. It's a good for a man not to touch a woman. But some of us have chosen the route to get married. I do want to just say I love my wife. It's a blessing being married to her. So I hope it didn't come across that it wasn't, because it really is. But the call here, though, is if a person, either by choice or by circumstance, is not married, then we need to do what we can as a congregation to encourage them and bless them and teach them to hold their bodies in purity before the Lord. Single people, keep yourself pure. I was in a church in another state speaking, and an older single lady told me that one of her cousins, who's never dated, had made a New Year's resolution: by December 31st, I will be passionately kissed by a man. Okay, so if God gives her a man, you know, in his timing, yes, but that's idolatry. If you place before you a goal to be kissed by a man with, you know, willy-nilly, whatever. So be very careful not to put your desires for companionship ahead of God's call for you to be pure. I think that's a call for us. So if you go down then, I want to take a little look also at verse 7. Paul says, I wish all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. I believe the Greek would be charisma for gift. So anybody familiar with C. Peter Wagner's gift survey would say, or he would interpret that as one of the gifts of the Spirit. I don't see the gift of singleness or the gift of marriage showing up in other lists, so I would not lean that direction. I would lean more to say it's a, where you are, you recognize where you are as a gift and you live fully in it. But God may call you out of that gift. If you're married, you recognize that as a gift, but God may take your spouse. Well, then you're not married anymore. So it doesn't, I think it's a circumstantial calling or a placement where God has you. And we should be fully alive in where God has called us. Every part doing its share, every person being known. Verses 7 through 9, there's one part in there that says it's better to marry than to burn. When I was 19, I think, I was on Reserve Waskaganish in Quebec for 5 weeks. And one of the brothers there would say, Richie, when are you going to get married? And I said, it's going to be a while, probably 25. No, Richie, the Bible says it's better to marry than to burn. And I said, well, the NIV says better marry than to burn with passion. And no, you're going to burn. You're going to burn if you don't get married. So he had this idea that you got to escape fire and get married. I think even here, we need to be careful to teach our youth. And if you're single, don't feel like, oh, you know what? I can't control my passions. I better go get married so it's going to be fixed. That's not going to happen. We have to pray that God would help us to have our eyes, our minds, our hearts, our bodies in purity before the Lord, to present our bodies to Him, and if He gives us a spouse, to our spouse. So let's not take this to say, oh, you know what? this person can't handle himself or herself, so we better get them married off. It doesn't really work that way. Okay, so that was 1 Corinthians 7. If you want to move down, I'm not going to read all of this chapter, but I would like to read from 27 to 38, which really tells us more of the same. Paul says, verse 27, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh, but I would spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as those they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep, those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use this world as not misusing it. For the form of this world is passing away, but I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. There is a difference between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I say for your own profit. Not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. But if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let him marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. So, it's pretty clear that the Apostle Paul is giving instructions to say that if a person, man or woman, can remain single, there is much to be done in the kingdom of God, and you can serve the Lord without distraction as a single person. Let's not just bypass that. I think there's clear teaching in there. Now, I think we could recognize that it's not a guarantee that a person who remains single in the church is serving the Lord without distraction. Maybe they're even just distracted by other people who are single. So an example, I was talking to my cousin who's an older single female. She has been attending a church for 4 months or so. It's a pretty big church, 250, 300 people. So she would normally sit up front with her friend. And the one day she brought her kind of cautious, socially anxious friend. So she sat in the back corner over there. And she said about 10 minutes in, she realized, wait a minute, I'm sitting in the single guys section. And she said, it's not okay, Rich. It's not okay. These men all had their phones. They weren't singing. They were looking at sports. They were coming in and out with coffee. I mean, I drink coffee in church too, so it's okay. It's not okay. They weren't engaged. They were coming to the church, but they were clocked out from the moment they walked in the door and they were leaving. So it's unfortunate if that happens. We need to look for ways to have every part do its share, every person to be known in the church. In my growing up years in Ohio, Rob Mullett and Marvin Mullett were very instrumental in helping me to see that the Bible can come alive and the God of the universe is a big God and we need to love him with all our hearts. And these were single men in their mid to late 20s, I think, at that point. I might be overstating their age. They seemed old to me. And I still just thank God for that opportunity. And then moving out to New York for a while, some of these people have now become married, but Marvin Miller, Dwight Nisley, Arlen Nisley, Lula Miller, Cheryl Mullett, Karen Grable, Dave Grable, Erlene Detweiler, Helena Tadeus, Dee Peachy, these single people have been, they've been a treasury of God's goodness to the church and to me and to my wife and my family. And I just thank God for them. So there's so much goodness that God wants to do in his church in the lives of unmarried men and women, whether they're 60, 50, 25. Quick snapshot. I'll talk about it a little bit more later. But the magic age, empirical data has it now, since 95 of you responded, not the magic age, but when a youth transitions to being a single is 23.6 years of age. I thought it was 25. Some of my friends thought it was 30. But you, by all of your wise counsel, I added all 95 responses and divided by 95, and it's 23.6. that's kind of when we can start calling youth singles. And one other just quick note here. Youth are adults. I don't have a bone with what you say there, Doran, but you know, they're adults too, so we don't say youth and adults. I just say young adults and older adults, but we'll talk about that later maybe. 1 Timothy 3, can we look back at that? Consider roles in the church that single adults can and should take. 1 Timothy 3. I'm not going to preach through this whole chapter here, just two phrases. This is speaking about men and men in leadership, and there's two phrases that I think can be mistakenly interpreted. One says the husband of one wife, and the one says able to manage his own household well. And I would submit to you this morning that the phrase the husband of one wife is saying this man must not be a womanizer. He must, if he's married, he must be married to one woman and not have this, trail of children behind him, maybe with other women, but I don't see that as a disqualifier for a single man. That's my understanding of that passage there. Again, we could talk about that more. And I'm even more convinced as you go down that where it says able to rule his household well, that does not mean the person has to have children. Otherwise, it would disqualify a man who's married. If his wife can't have children, well, then he's not qualified for leadership. I don't see that those two statements disqualify a mature, godly, single man from serving in church leadership of some capacity. If it did, then the Apostle Paul would have been inadvertently disqualifying himself. And if you look at other passages, I don't see those. I think the Bible, when you compare the Bible with other scriptures, I don't see that 1 Timothy 3 is only for a married man. And I'm not going to take a long time on that, but that's my understanding of it. Now, if you go back to 1 Timothy 2, look at 11 and 12. Let a woman learn in silence with all submission, and I did not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over man, but to be in silence. So, what roles, let me just back up to the man's opportunities. So men can teach, can preach, prophesy. There's another passage that says, do the work of an evangelist. Any single man can do that. Evangelize, host, lead, pray, serve, fellowship, listen, get to know the church. So the role of the single adult male in the church, there's opportunities for service, I believe, in any capacity. With women, women can teach other women, can evangelize, host, serve, assist, help, fellowship with others, pray, prophesy, make disciples of other women, be a support role. There's so many things that women, single women, can do that we need to give them opportunities to do. Now, it does say, I don't want to discount that it does say, I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over man. So, in the role of church leadership, that wouldn't be an option, but I think we already know that. We've settled that together, our understanding of Scripture as an alliance. But what can we give to single women to do? So it is a question that comes up, and I've had some conversations. So if you have a single woman who's 25, 26, and decides, I want to go get a little more education, and then maybe gets a little more education and has some good experience, is able to be independent, what are we going to do to be able to help them to be engaged in the church? And I think we should be very willing to interact with them and give them opportunities to serve in the church. And then, which I'll talk about a little bit later, even asking if there's anything that they want us to do to help them in furthering their education or in relating with other people. So there's opportunities that we should give to single adults, and we should make ourselves available, I believe, to help them in the changes that they're facing. So there was a question I remember at FGMC about whether women would be able to serve on committees. And at one point, there was some committees that women couldn't. I think it still is that way. So that was opened at one point, and most of the married women said, we would actually rather not serve on those committees. But some of the single women said, we don't feel like we know really what's going on. So I think if there is that sentiment, or if there's older single women who don't have family represented in the church, there should be some kind of a process to keep them at least informed of what's going on. Some churches have most of their meetings as men's meetings. So then if there's an older single woman, she doesn't even know what the agenda was, what the discussion was, what the results were, because the married women know, the men know, but what about the single women? So I think we have to try to have a way of including, at least in the information, and sometimes even in the process of that. The Church of Jesus Christ is called to grow up in all things into Him who is the head, Jesus Christ. Every part does its share. Can you say that with me? Every part does its share. And every person be known. Every person be known. This obviously includes single adults. So just quickly, I want to consider a brief history of singlehood. Before Christ, and even in the days of Christ, of Jesus, the value and the worth of a woman was so bound up in whether she could be married and whether she had the reproductive capacity to give birth to a son. And so you can just look back through the Old Testament. You read the book of Ruth, and you see that when Naomi's daughters-in-law didn't have an opportunity to be married, she said, go back to your people so you can get a husband. You know, so wrapped up in that. So Jesus comes along, and He brought a message of value and worth to singles. And it just goes all through. Follow me, He said. I don't come to bring peace but a sword. Follow me. You know, Jesus can be the one we follow. We don't have to find our value and worth in whether we're married or single. He didn't preach against marriage, but He did teach that marriage is not an eternal state. He said at the resurrection in Matthew 22:30, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like angels in heaven. So, okay, in eternity, we got to consider what our state will be. We'll be servants of the Lord, sons and daughters of the kingdom. Only the resurrection carries eternal significance. Our state here on earth is really, whether we're married or single, that's not what defines who we're going to be in heaven. The resurrection is what matters. Jesus said in Matthew 19:12, some have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept it, let him accept it. So He didn't downplay marriage, but He valued singles, gave them a role and a place in the kingdom of heaven. And Paul really seemed to add to that, bring more of that message, as we noticed in 1 Corinthians 7 and other passages. So then you have that kind of pendulum that's over here where women are only valued by whether they're married or can give birth. And then Jesus comes back and kind of helps to get that a little more in the center. And then it seems like the church started to push towards saying, oh, you actually have to if you want to be really committed to God, you're going to go to a monastery, you're going to go to the Catholic Church, started to do that. The nuns are going to go off to a convent, and in 1239, they had a decision that priests are going to have to be celibate, take a vow of celibacy. So now it's kind of pushed back that way. Well, then the reformers and their stepchildren in the 1500s, like, no, they brought back marriage to the biblical value, and it was right. Marriage is good. Having children is good. You know, if you go back to this swing over here, Jerome, in the 4th century, I understand he took the parable of the sower and said when the good seed came up, the 100-fold was virgins, the 60-fold was widows, and the 30-fold was married people. You know, that was really kind of pushing the pendulum to singleness. So the reformers said, no, we want to value marriage. And it seems like even within the Anabaptist scene, maybe we've kind of pushed it back this way. And I think we have to be careful not to throw it one way or the other, but bring back value to all. Every person doing its part, every person being known in the church. So this could be a long topic, but I'll try to keep this part brief here. In preparation for this message, I spoke to some single friends, and surprisingly, some of them said, "We want help in getting married." I'm 0-for-4 as a matchmaker. I tried. I thought I was going to do good at this, and after 4 tries, I put my matchmaker hat, it's collecting dust on the shelf, and I thought, no, that can't. One of them said, pastors should compare notes. Hey, I've got this older single woman over here. Do you got anybody over there? Yeah. You know, they should get together. And one of them said, could you set me up on a blind date? We've been trying. It hasn't worked out. We tried once. I commend them for their honesty because they really want to be married and they actually want help. So there's actually nothing wrong with somebody saying, I really want to be married and I'm not sure if I am. Would you be able to pray for me? If they want to ask for that, I think that's okay. Carter Conlon in Times Square Church, one of my friends told me about this. He was giving a message on, I think, marriage. And he said, all the single ladies, stand up. Now, this is a church of about 6,000 people, so all these single ladies stood up. Okay, all the single men, stand up. They stood up. Now, turn to each other, look at each other. Maybe you can get married. Sit down. So I guess that's what happens at a megachurch. Fairplay Boys School in South Carolina, we were there for 4 months in 2016, and I realized that one of the byproducts of that, the founder, I forget his name now, he loved when people would come down, single staff would come down, and they would become a couple. Oh, yes, I love this. So he celebrated the chance to put people together. I think I'm going to go on the side of caution here. Most single people do not want your help in this area. They're willing to have you pray for them, but they don't want your help. I think I'm going to recommend keeping that side of the caution. If in talking to them they say, could you help me? Could you pray for me? Sure, do it. I mean, at least pray for them. I don't have any advice on matchmaking. But don't just assume that because somebody's 25, 30, 35, 40, that they definitely want to get married. My friend, who was an older single before he got married, he used to tell people, hey, if you go to a wedding and somebody comes up to you and says, that could be you, he said, make sure you make a mental note of that person. Then, when you go to a funeral, that could be you. So that's his way of telling people, be careful, be careful. So I think it's okay for single people to look to the future and hope and pray and say, God, I want to be married. I would really like to be married. That's okay. One of my friends said, I don't know how that works. It says in Psalm 37, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Well, I want to be married and he hasn't given me that. So then what? What do I do? So, I mean, I think you can kind of journey with them and try to empathize with them because how do you respond to that? You know, you can pray. It's okay to want that to happen. But remember, let's not make that an idol. Let's not make that a goal that supersedes God's call for you to keep your body in purity and supersedes God's call for you to be engaged in the church, where every person does his share and every person is known. Every part does its share. Okay, we've got to move along here. I think I have some survey results, if this clicker is going to work for me. Here we go. Just want to, okay, so I think I sent out an email to approximately 190 church leaders in the BMA, and 95 responded, I think. So 50%. Give yourselves a hand. It could be better, but it could be worse. So we'll go the glass half full here and say half of you responded. Incidentally, one of the brothers sent me an email and said, I felt defensive about your email, and I'm going to write a paper about how we're overworked. So we might even get some good responses out of this right here. Because I think we don't do super well in responding, but thank you all who did. And any of you who didn't, don't feel bad. I still love you. Okay, so 49% pastors, 22% were assistant pastors, 14% deacons, 3% elders, and 12% identified as others. And I took the totals of the average church attendance, and then I took the totals of the average singles you have in your churches, and at least of those who responded, we have about 8.5% of people in our churches that we would identify as singles. So I don't know if, you know, whatever that is, 7 to 10%, but 8.5% is what showed up there. Okay, so that's that. That pie you probably can't see very well, but it has questions. So my question was, choose the answer that fits best regarding your church and how it relates to singles. 5% of you said we have an active singles group in our church. That doesn't really bother me. I don't really feel like every church has to have an active singles church. 65% said singles fit in and are integrated into church body life. That's the big blue section of your pie. 13% said families often include singles in family activities. I'm not even sure which one that is over there, 13%. All of the above was 6%, and none of the above was 11%. So maybe the 11% is a concern, because if your churches do not feel, or if you don't feel like you're integrating singles into church life, if you don't feel like families are including singles in the church, then that's work. We got some work to do, work ahead of us. Here's another one that's a little more revealing, maybe concerning. Here's a question. How many times in 2019 did you and or your family invite a single person not related to your family into your home for a meal and or fellowship? One time, 11% of you said. Never, 17% of you said. 2 to 5 times, 47%. More than 5 times, 25%. Okay, so that means that 75% of the respondents had a single person in their home 5 times or fewer last year. I think we have work to do. So I know we have many things to do, and I don't want to say this in a way that makes you walk away feeling, oh, I just feel worn out. But we all eat meals. I'm sure you do. And most of us have dining room tables, probably almost all of us. So if you eat a meal, have a dining room table, invite somebody to join you. It's not that difficult once a month. So let's try to bump this at least up to 12. So if you can have a single person or several in your home. And here's another plug. Just There's people all around you, not even a part of your church, that are single. Just have them in your home. If you can't find anybody in your church because you don't have singles, well, statistics say that today, more than ever before, America is a single nation. There's not that many people that are living together or even married. There's singles all around us that need the love of God. So I think we have work to do there. I'm not going to go much further on that. Okay, we're running out of time, so I'm going to jump through a few more things here. Just some advice from some of you that I'm going to say. There was more here. I think I'm just going to read about five of them. So here's the top one. Remember that singles are whole people, just as they are. Marriage does not magically make a single person whole or complete. Remember Paul and especially Jesus. These were responses from the survey. I asked a question, do you have any counsel for church leaders that could help them, equip them to engage singles? So here's another one. Treat singles as adults, not like the youth. Keep the single ladies up to date with church matters. Give them opportunity to give feedback. Treat each single with the same importance, treatment you would give a family. Use them and value their input. Adult single men and women should be viewed equally as a hand, foot, nose, etc. in the body. Take your pick. Their gifts should be developed, identified, and utilized. Pastors should be equally concerned about the challenges of singlehood as the challenges of marriages and seek to shepherd both. That's good counsel. Two more. Ask them to fill roles in church life that will draw them out of their shell. My experience is that many singles are lonely, feel like a third thumb. We need to include them in family activities to be family when some are not integrated into their bio families. Small congregations sure help keep everyone connected and needed. There you go. Plug for small congregations. So I'm going to have to just blank that, and we'll just try to wrap this up. So I want to just call us to an application yet. Remember those five words, every part does it share. Can you say that back with me? Every part does it share. And every person is known. Say that. Every person is known. So I want to encourage you this year, maybe even this month, to consider inviting a single person or persons into your home for a meal. Simple meal. Doesn't have to be complicated. You know, you might want to clean the table, but you don't have to dust everywhere. Just simple. Ask honest questions about their involvement in the church. You know, do you feel a sense of ownership in the church? If not, why not? Do you feel the church is your family? How do you feel about your situation in life? Maybe there's something that you don't even, there probably is something you don't know about them that you could find out just by asking around a meal. Families should provide opportunities for singles. You know, there's a book, I read a book some time back and I went back to it. It's called Singles at the Crossroads. Albert Sue is the, H-S-U is the author. And he talks about trying to, you know, lead us from loneliness to solitude and from aloneness to community. So in order to do that, we need to look for ways as a family to provide places for the lonely to come to. I think we really should. So that's one call. For those of you who preach or talk about preaching schedules, set up preaching schedules, prayerfully consider bringing a message on the role of singles in the church or single life, just commendations to single people. I think I preached a message similar to this back in 2009, but it's helpful. I'd like to actually try to do it again in our little group we have there. Don't do this if you don't speak to singles at all. And if you don't know them, there's no sense trying to speak to them. So maybe if you don't feel like you even have much to say, at least try the dialogue and try to get to know them. It can be a little bit tough to know what to say. You know, what do you do then for a Mother's Day message? What do you do for Father's Day message? You know, you should be able to include commendations to single people even in that. We have one dear friend who's an older single woman. She says, every Mother's Day, when there's a Mother's Day message, my arms just ache because I wish I had a child. So, you know, we can at least empathize, you know, with them and try to understand what's going on. Want to just conclude. The church of Jesus Christ is called to grow up in all things into him who is the head, Jesus Christ. Every part does its share. Can you say it with me? Every part does its share. And then every person is known. Every person is known. Father, I pray that you'd guide us. There's a lot for us to learn. You've given so much to us through Jesus, through your word, through your spirit, and through your church. And we want to see your church grow and everybody be known, every part, every person do its share. Help us to do that with grace and dignity, humility, for your honor, in Jesus' name, amen.